Sweet grace, how music lets my mind take flight. Red life, my life, living awake of sleepless nights. Read my eyes, colorblind, catch a glimpse of baby's sight. Realize there's more to see than all this rock around me. Grant this girl a beat and let my soul run free. Amidst the plague of war, there ain't no way I'd rather be. One love for my people, you and I-T-E. Instead of feeling reserved, my reserve fill
I'm
me.
I'm feeling reserved. Man, the time living. I gotta do with this mic I was given to try to get by. No word of a lie. We gotta try to restore pride.
I'm feeling reserved. Man, that's how I'm living. I gotta do with this mic I was given to try to get by. No word of a lie. We gotta try to restore pride. I'm feeling reserved. Man, that's how I'm living. I gotta do with this mic I was given to try to get by. No word of a lie. We gotta try to restore pride.
While that is handled, and what the government of Canada is hoping to put in place is that until now, there are 433 schools were operating as independent institutions with their own support. It's not like a school board who comes to support the school with curriculum and standards and verification. Each school was independent. But all of that was based on the Indian control of Indian education policy, which back then said, yes, you as a school do have that full authority. But in reality, because the resources didn't come, we weren't able to develop curriculum and ensure that when children are learning to read, that some of the books can at least depict who they are as a people. Because all the textbooks that are bought from mainstream companies, for the most part, don't show the picture of the First Nations people living off the land or, you know, doing the kind of activities that the children are familiar with. So the federal government believes that creating these systems, as they call them, within each of the regions, it'll be school board or what's called second level services, would then come to support the school and provide those additional services that the school cannot give itself. A good example of that in Quebec is, of course, the Cree School Board, where they do exactly that. But for all of the other First Nations, that doesn't exist. And it's not to say that there isn't a real need, because some of the issues, sometimes the standards within the school leave to be desired. Sometimes some of the teachers that are hired are not teachers, are not even, and therefore, not to say that they're not good people who don't care, but there are real limitations there. And no doubt in the area of recruitment of teachers has been another big problem. Recruitment and retention of teachers in First Nations, just people are no longer even applying. They're not even bothering to apply in First Nations. And often the issues, the local politics, the local issues, and people just don't stick it out. There is a lot of discussion about putting in additional resources for recruitment and retention to try to make that happen, but the solution, I believe, is going to be found in encouraging more young First Nations people, because there's a better chance that they're going to remain than if they're outsiders coming into a community often, because they have a better understanding of what's going on. And it's not to say that non-First Nations people aren't good teachers. It's just that often they come in with expectations and stereotypes that are unbelievable. My experience tells me that it's unbelievable. You have to wonder what's learned in public system, mainstream system. And it's not that we haven't tried. We've tried to work with ministries to offer our advice or ideas, and basically we've been told, go away. We know what we're doing. Then we wonder why this confrontation between First Nations and non-First Nations people, when we can't even talk to each other, we can't even dialogue. That's what occurs. I'm a strong believer in speaking to people, trying to find resolution, and all of that, as our elders have told us time and time again, has to be built on respect. One of our elders in our community, Elder William Kamanda, who's a carrier of the sacred wampum belt. The belts date back to the 1500s. They've been passed on in the Algonquin Nation. And one of the belts deals with it's a prophecy belt, and only he can read it. But I think the belts have clearly indicated where we've been and where we're going. And Elder Kamanda also has one belt that has three figures on it, and they're holding hands. And on one side, there's a cross. And this belt, he tells us, was made to demonstrate that the Anishinaabe people had agreed to live in partnership and in peace with the French and English. They held hands with each other. And that the church would stay apart from their affairs, they would be there. But they also agreed to share the resources of the land. As he said, 33 and a third, 33 and a third, 33 and a third. And Elder Kamanda says, where is the 33 and a third portion that belongs to First Nations? Where is it? We haven't seen it. We don't get it. Our people are still suffering. And the recent situation in Ontario in regards to the water that hit the media, how many other communities face that same problem? In Quebec, probably the majority are facing some of the northern communities. I know Algonquin communities, remote areas. People live in shacks. In the winter, they have one hell of a hard time. Kids are sent off to school. Millions are spent. Graduation rate is atrocious. School board makes all of the money. They don't care if the kids get kicked out in October or November, because the money will still flow. That's the kind of thing that I'm hoping in my lifetime, in somebody's lifetime, will come to an end. Now, added to all of that, I can say that there has been progress. I think we've made some progress. We've had some losses, like I think the loss of our language is slowly eroding away. We have to be tremendously concerned. And because what we were told and shown by our elders is that in our language and body, who we are, our worldview is found in those words. And if we lose those words and we lose our understanding of that worldview, and what is it that we will be able to share? And I recall in the days also of Pierre Trudeau, he had a debate with some of the chiefs about that, and you know, basically saying that if you don't speak your language, you don't practice your culture, you don't hold ceremonies, then you're a Canadian. Like, if you're a Canadian, you're a... So why should you be treated differently? Of course, he spoke of a just society, right? A society where everyone is equal. And some of you may recall the name of Errol Cardinal, who was the one who challenged him on that. And that's where the red paper came out, and where Errol Cardinal wrote the book, The Unjust Society, to try to counter. And there's been many other books after that. And in the U.S., from what I've read, in the 50s, there were a number of tribes who lost who lost their status and their land because they were no longer able to demonstrate that they spoke the language, that they practiced the traditions, and therefore they forfeited everything. We know why our people were sent to residential school. We know when that failed, they said the solution is going to be to send them to provincial schools. We understand what the goal was within all of that. And in a lot of ways, I think they've succeeded. To say that they haven't succeeded, I think they have. And I think a lot of First Nations in Canada are trying to reverse that. I'm involved across Canada with an organization called the First Nations Confederacy of Cultural Education Centers. And what that is, it's 87 cultural centers working with about 400 communities in Canada. And their primary work is to come and support First Nations languages. But they also do cultural centers, exhibitions, activities at the community level. And we've been advocating for a long time for increased resources, but that hasn't come. But that organization has been in place now for 35 years. And virtually every community has a center or has a program or has funding that they use for language development. So I can't stress enough, in my belief, the importance of the language and the culture. And I know in our own community, there may be 60 people left who are fluent speakers. And then there's a total break after that. And then there are people who know some of the language, you know songs, some words. And what occurs is that when you teach language in the classroom, you're boxing the language in. Because the language was an oral tradition, and it was learnt on the land, and it was learnt in a natural setting. And they have told us that. But the question becomes, what can we do to make a difference there to ensure that it will survive and go on? Experience of the role of the health practitioners within the school as leaders and role models and instituting programs that are going to make a difference with families. And I've learned in my involvement both regionally and nationally in regards to early childhood. I was involved with the Head Start programs and then the development of child care programs and how the funding was going to roll out. And I quickly realized that there has to be a way for, and I don't see it often, because in the communities, you have health, you have education, you have justice, you have the ban office. Mm-hmm. It's like stovepipes. And we complain that government does that all the time, but we don't seem to be able to pull it together and pull limited resources often to make it work because we want to protect our own little turf. So I see it as being very important, the kind of amalgamation and pulling together, because you're dealing with the same people, the same clientele of people and community members, but I'm not seeing it happen again.
Do you think that's related to, the way that the government has instituted the way that we should run our communities? We're just kind of, manifesting kind of what the government wants us to do in the first place, so we're not really trying to incorporate ways that we know how to do it, because it's not the way that the government would do it.
Well, that's partially true. although at the community level we have the flexibility, do we want to give it to ourselves? An example for us was in my own community, the Ed Start program and the daycare. I mean, early on, because I was involved in it, there was a debate, should be education overlooking it or health? And because education deals with preschool, 4 and 5 year olds, for us it made sense that it fall under education. So it wasn't even an issue. We did amalgamate it, and now the federal government is talking about one window shopping for all of early childhood. We were already doing that. So the community has that authority, I believe, or can take it to pull it together, and I often don't understand why communities don't. Now, I'm told that sometimes they're told by the bureaucrats, well, if you don't do it our way, the money won't flow.
Right.
My answer to that was, try it. Because when we opened our daycare in our community, a 60-place daycare, we built it ourselves, we were told that we had to hold a provincial license. They said, you can't run a daycare without a provincial license. It's a provincial jurisdiction. My answer and my colleagues' answers were, we'll see about that. And he said, we're gonna lock your daycare, we'll shut it down. And I said again, just give it a try. Come and try to put a lock in a door. Come and try. The funding flowed. We were able to do it. Nobody ever bothered us. We developed our own standards. And we weren't inventing a wheel there. We took an existing wheel, modified it, and made it work for us, and that's all. But often I find in communities people, again, I give the example of years ago, a lot of our people used to be guides for American tourists and French tourists, and they did a lot of that, and they were very good at it. And that's why a lot of our older people are trilingual. They learned English from the Americans, French from the Quebecois, and then they spoke their own language when they didn't have the Americans to understand. But their work primarily were a little bit like when you see the on TV or a movie, the African safaris. And they would carry all the heavy stuff and the canoes and the motor, whatever they had to carry, the moose or whatever. But one of the things, unless they were drinking, because often they drank with these people, with these American tourists, other people, but one of the things was that often eye contact wasn't allowed. And it's a little bit like, you know, yes sir, no sir, yes sir. And you would never look, and you would just do what you're being asked. And I know when I sit around the table with chiefs sometimes, and I'm critical to them, as in, you sense that colonized mentality exists so deeply, it's so rooted. So if somebody tells you, you know, Mr. White Duck, I don't think you're going to be able to use your program this way. And so you lower your head and say, yes, sir, okay, what do you want me to do? And I say, good God, we're in 2005. Doesn't that get you angry? I bubble all over. When I see, I can't. I will not. I don't believe. I believe we have the capacity. We have it in our hearts. We have it in our spirits. We have the... And I look at young people who are graduating. I see it in my community. I see them elsewhere. And I say, you are it. You old. And I see young, balanced people. Recently, a young lady in my own community took over from my position. A graduate of our school. Because we're only one of two schools in Quebec that issues our own high school leaving diploma without provincial authorization. And years ago we had gone out and the Seychelles accepted our diploma as being equivalent, so it's not even an issue. So she was one of those young people who went out to get her degree. And when I see her take over as a young woman in a key position and very balanced, I say there is hope. There is hope that there will be a difference. And that's what I'm hoping, and I'm always encouraging. You know, and then I'm hoping that older people like myself are going to come and support the young people, because it's not going to be easy. Because when I went through it, there was nobody. You know, when I graduated from my school, I think I was only one of two graduating. No one else graduated in those days. And to go on to college was not supposed to happen. I remember the guidance counselor at the school and saying, well, Gilbert, you know, don't think of going off to college, because that's not even... You want to become a plumber, maybe you'll be staying in the community and all of that. And we were told, and the Indian Affairs person that used to come used to tell me that all the time. So one day I know I got arrogant and I said to the Indian Affairs agent, I was 16 years old, I said, you know, one day it's your position that I'm going to have. And that took a lot of guts for me to tell him that. One day. And years later, in reality, because I started off as a student counselor, that's exactly what occurred. But all of that came again because of support, though, along the way, and determination. Because in my own community, my chief, the chief brother of the community is my brother. He's been chief for 29 years. Well, that's a good thing and a bad thing. I can tell you this, that I was a counselor and he was a chief, and we were always arguing to no end. We have totally different view of politics about where things should go. But he's still a chief. I'm gone, so that's another thing. A lot of politics in regards to that. But I'm open. You know, we've attempted over the years to work with McGill, even when this center was initially moving forward, and it really hasn't gone anywhere. It doesn't carry the kind of weight or center of excellence that it could to make a difference, to ensure that the voices of First Nations, not just the students, but First Nations issues, are well ingrained into all of the programs that are delivered. So Canadians or other people from other countries that come to the university better understand the realities of First Nations. Because obviously most are not going to be coming to our communities, so our best efforts are going to be through the institutions. And no doubt that Canadians, but Quebecers in particular, because I know when we have a cultural center in our community and the most misinformed people are Quebecers in regards to First Nations issues. And the best informed often we find are from European countries and other people who have studied up, and they just, it's incredible their knowledge about it. Quebecers aren't. And how unfortunate. How unfortunate. What window of opportunity there is to get people to speak to each other, to share, and to say, how do we make things better? How do you help me? How do I help you? What are some things that I can offer you? Our traditional medicines, for example. There's a wealth of knowledge yet. A wealth of knowledge that has not been shared. And a lot of our community members, older people who are knowledgeable in this, have become very weary. Very weary of sharing. Because time and time again, researchers have come into our communities to collect information, claiming that they would come back with a product or they would give their research. And you know what? They were gone. They had published and they became the experts in the field. They became university professors and were now able to speak. It angers me because I sat on I had the opportunity to sit in on this lady was defending her doctoral thesis. And I wasn't allowed to speak, and the elder William Kamana and myself were invited to listen in, and I said, oh my God, is this all she has to do to get this? I mean, she had gone into a number of communities to meet with the elders and whatnot. I read her paper. I said, this is unacceptable. If that's what the standards are of a university, then I got real problems about what kind of people are graduating. Because I know what I would have asked. And she would have had real difficulty. Because obviously she didn't understand fully, really well, what she should have studied. And at this level, I believe she should have. I still think, be it with McGill, Concordia, or with Seychelles, there's still a lot of work to be done. There's still to make it more welcoming and to, Juanique was talking about centers of excellence and that kind of idea. I fully support that. And we may have to select one or two areas to develop that in, you know, sports and leisure and these kind of things, because our communities also are in dire need of something occurring. And we have tremendous talent that is not tapped, you know, that we could use that for our young people. And again, the whole idea that these become role models, make a difference. And it's really a ripple effect, a tremendous ripple effect at the community level when this occurs. We've had in our community a few people who have made it to the NHL. John Chabot, Gino Olgic, of course. It's a tremendous how people are attracted to that. And then if these people in turn can become leaders. And I know when he came to the school to meet our students, I mean, she was a real role model for these young people, seeing what was possible. that point. We just need so much more of that. From the Algonquin Nation, I have to respect what other nations do. But I would say this. I mean, sometimes it can move in a particular direction, but there are certain communities that also, our view would be you've sold out. Because you've made alliances in ways that we wouldn't even go to. For example, alliances in allowing the provincial government to have greater say in the delivery of services, the standards to be used. And that kind of thinking varies in different ways across Canada, from wanting total autonomy and saying we're capable, to others saying we're willing to make alliances and make compromise, and that'll work for us. So I'm not so sure. I mean, leadership across Canada has emerged, but there hasn't been any group or individuals that have, in my mind, truly emerged with a new, I'll call it a new vision. It's the same recycled stuff. You know, that hasn't happened like the Harold Cardinal days or some of the other people that emerged back then. We haven't seen that. And as Marie Batiste, I think she's at the First Nations University of Canada, often stated, we need a revolution. If we're going to make a difference in languages and other stuff, we need this new revolution to take place. And until it does, we're just going to trudge along. And I think, though, before we can reach out to anyone, we have to break the shackles ourselves. And some of you have probably read the book Pedagogy of the Oppressed, Paulo Freire. I mean, the whole thing, we're a bit like elephants. We do hold the power and capacity. We're that elephant chained to that little peg. And we've been told that that little peg is always going to hold us. And whenever we feel the chain coming to an end, we stop. So we need, if we can break away from the peg, And feel strong, and then we can reach out. Because right now, we're not trusting. I don't find we are. And when you ask those kind of questions, my defenses automatically go up or wherever I go. And that's why, when I think of young people, if your spirit is strong, your defenses then are not... You don't have to be strong in the same kind of way. You know, you're coming from a different place. And I think often that's not what... And the revolution, in my mind, means... It means people looking at things in a different and in a new, refreshing way. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I'm hoping. Be it for health, be it for education, for justice issues. You know, and again, and I'm saying, where is that going to come from? It's going to come from young people. We've had different experiences with the support of elders and the support of other people who had experience. But that's where else is it going to come from? That's where it came from before. You know, will it happen? I'm not so sure. It's going to take something to spark it. It'll take something to explode it. I'm not sure when it's going to be. Certainly the loss of over 500 right, First Nations women hasn't done it. The graduation rate of only 35 or 40% hasn't done it. So the dropout rate being so atrocious isn't doing it. The high levels of diabetes in our communities isn't doing it. High levels of other diseases aren't doing it. The water situation isn't doing it. The housing situation isn't doing it. The mold in the homes isn't doing it. The clear cutting of our territories isn't doing it. The taking of those natural resources isn't doing it. What will it take? What does it take for, you know, a nation? What has Quebec tried to do? And are we again, I believe we have become complacent. And I believe that we've been set up royally to do exactly of stovepiping and programs and modeling ourselves to what we see on the outside. And if you're a leader, I mean, if you're involved in it, then, you know, you've got money. I mean, you're living, and I know within our own community, I mean, the bulk of the people, most of the people are employed seasonally, and the rest of the people are employed full-time. Well, there's a big gap in income and accessibility to material things, access to travel, and there's a hell of a big gap. And sometimes I believe our leadership forget, not always, some really try hard and you've got to recognize, but you forget where you've come from. But maybe you weren't even ever there. Were you ever in the trenches and poor and a hard time? And did you ever feel that kind of... For many people, they haven't felt that. So how can you truly represent it then? That's how I feel, anyhow, that if you haven't... Or you haven't even bothered to go talk to someone that's living through it or living with it to try to understand what are the issues. And I go back to male leadership and say, how can male leadership truly understand the issues that women face in society, First Nations women, in regards to, you know, housing issues within the community, as you know, when families split up, who gets the house, the male, the female? The laws are a bit different. Only women. So I'm hoping First Nations women will step up to the plate and ensure that these things are brought forward. And talk about balance. Always talk about balance. Hopefully that's what our teachings, our elders taught us. There was always balance in our society. Everybody had a role to play. And that role was both respected, and certainly women were the most respected because they were the life givers. And you would never dare, you know. You always had the responsibility to support that. So when do we start the revolution?
Mama cried, daddy cried, sister cried, brother cried from that sad realization that we are born to die. But in the meantime, we start off as intimacy inside me, mama's belly, newborn to infancy. My first breath's a mystery, my first step is history. In the fight against misery, life is a sign of victory. Crime boss, corporate boss, poison stocks, burning cross, culture lost, Nazi cops, corroding blocks, get a holocaust. OG did a bank job for the movement, just got out the pen. What's up, teacher man? The city's burning again, the youth is learning again. We raise our to the sun, face covered in camouflage, raising up our guns, raising up our funds, strategize on the low-low. Spiritual soldiers, talking to cops is a no-no. Environmentally minded, not afraid to get violent. The creator told me that speaking the truth is my assignment. I'm designing a strategy with a bunch of my accomplices who all have their own accomplishments to properly launch this shit out of the dysfunction into stability. If you don't have it, you best to reconsider killing me.
Soldiers blowing baby's breath, walking news, enable death, appraisal mess, dawning to depths, drowning son of less, time it takes for the funeral to possess to profess monophiliation, witness the death of a space station, celestial sites for extermination, 9/11 double tap of inferno incineration, the human race is revolution into revelations, no devastation for me, it's only more to see, more realities, build my palace, monuments of affinity, this document of the trinity, mind, body, and soul, doctrine of control, guard my goal like gargoyles, watching the sun through black holes, some people lack hold of the spirit, others lost fully in the physical, mystical clue to who knows the answer to the remedy for miserable and cynical. Divine disaster, to get a blasters, fly your flag, or fight body bags like kites for half masters. Smash pastors, live or via legal, airwave tapes to CDs. Fan from TV, rock the PVs, bouncer stomping out the beaties. Probably no these problems, I bring myself with this mentality. Mentality's just one formality, my aboriginality. Individuality make me see clear states, raw reality. Shadow of the galaxy with double swords of duality. Medicine, my state, murder, Mephistopheles in your municipality. Marking your abilities, marketing abilities, no points for originality. Your shit's weak, your shit's weak. Kill them.